All right, so...
Okay, a brief error with my script. I was pointing at a non-existent web server by accident. So we're okay now. So I said that we were running business services over here, and we can see we're receiving logins, and our perfmon is showing some performance coming on here. Mm-hmm. And let's go ahead and crank some more loads. Add 800 users to this.
So what exactly is the purpose of this particular test?
I'm going to show you dynamic clustering here.
Nice.
And I'm going to add a new service host dynamically that's going to service some of the load on business services. You get that with the configuration service.
Uh-huh.
It will allow you to do the load balancing automatically to your remote nodes and track all of those nodes. It also understands when nodes go offline, mm-hmm. does failover, and it also understands when new nodes come up and starts shelling out requests to the new nodes.
Nice.
Just by virtue of starting up the new node. It's kind of like, in a way, a dynamic cluster. You don't have to go through any complicated configuration steps mm-hmm. to set up four servers that are running your web service to get the load balance request. You just literally start them up on a new node, and because they point to the same configuration repository, mm-hmm. the configuration service then understands that they're adding themselves to the cluster and notifies all the clients, and they'll start getting load in the system. So let's take a look at that. So right now you can see we're beginning to get close to a bottleneck here on our business service tier running on one business service host. And if we look at the web server, this is now the web server over here. We've got actually fairly equal distribution of processing power going on. They're going to cap out at approximately the same place. But I just want to show you this. Let's go back to the business service tier. And we're at about, 900 TPS, something along those lines. And we look at our perfmon counter here. Let's add another, say, 300 users to the system. We're running a completely different configuration now, so the TPS rates aren't going to match, because we're now running web services, the web service tier, on a single 2-proc box, not a 4-proc box anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And our web server's now changed as well. And you can see we're kind of capping out in the perfmon. We can see we're capping out our business service, and you see all the logins happening here. These are all the logins that the script is driving. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to come over here. And I'm going to start up a new business service host. Just start it. Let's take a look at our perfmon counters. And take a look at this guy over here.
Sure. Going down.
Boom. Clustering. Yeah. Load balancing. Without any configuration options other than pointing to the same repository, the configuration service has done all the work to notify the connected client, and he comes online and immediately he is servicing requests. And you can see that this guy is now half the CPU rate because he's got a partner, a peer node, working in tandem to service all the requests from our web server. And of course our TPS rate was pretty much where it was going to be. It's going to go up a little bit now because we now have a little bit more capacity.
Yeah.
It's not going to go up a lot because now in this mode, our bottleneck's going to be our single web server, right? And so I might want to cluster him as well.
Nice.
But this just gives you kind of a view of one aspect of how this configuration service, you can implement this in any of your own apps. There's a test harness that's provided as a solution so that you can get all the benefits of the config web, the dynamic clustering, completely independent of the stock trader app. It's just a completely independent set of shared libraries that ship with source code. So you can edit the source code, modify it, have it do anything. But as a stock implementation, it's very easy to build an implementation of this. So you can get this in your web apps and your services to manage kind of remote configurations, if you will. Let's just show the failover. Now, keep in mind, I'm servicing roughly 1,100 concurrent requests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a lot. And there's going to be some open network connections, right, on some of these requests.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to fail over. I want to minimize failures if one of these nodes goes down.
Okay.
I can't get rid of all of them because some of them are going to be in the middle of a socket connection to the web, to the remote web service, right? I'm not going to be able to get rid of those errors because those are concurrent open sockets, and there's really nothing you can do about that when you close, when that network connectivity stops.
Yeah.
But what we can do is application level failover and see what we can reduce our error rate to when one of these hosts fails. So let's force a failure. I'm going to go to Taskman. Okay. If I was just to close this, it would exit gracefully. It would do a graceful shutdown. Okay, so I want to do a simulate a crash. And I'm going to do that by going over here to processes. And there's my process running the business service console. And now keep in mind, he's servicing a lot of concurrent requests. And I'm going to kill him live here. and poof, he's gone. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard crash.
Yeah.
Let's just take a look at what's going on here. First of all, we'll notice, I mentioned that we're going to get some errors, some clogging connection errors. We got 32 out of 1,100 current request or TPS.
Mm-hmm.
We did get 32 closed socket connections, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we do have immediate failover, really sub-second failover here.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice what happened over here with business services. You'll see he picked up all of the load immediately. That client is no longer directing requests to our failed service node.
Mm-hmm.
He did basically an automatic application level failover. So he knows that guy went down and started redirecting all those requests back to the single service host.
Excellent.
Does that make some sense for application level failover there across our clustered nodes? And of course, we could boot this guy back up at any time and restart him. And we'll find him and go ahead and add him back in to the system. We actually got a few more errors there, 40 errors total. But we'll let him boot up and go to Profile. And you can see he's now picked up the load immediately just by restarting. Now, this is done in a Windows app. And it's kind of convenient as a sample app and a demo to show you things like perfmon and messages going on in the console. But you could self-host in an NT service with no UI or in a console app. NT service makes a lot of sense because it self-boots as well.
Absolutely.
And with IIS 7, you can host in IIS 7 and go over transport protocols besides HTTP. So I'm going TCP here in the self-host because IIS 6 can only host WCF services over HTTP XML encoding.
Wow.
But IIS 7 on Vista and Windows Server 2008 removes that limitation, and IIS 7 can be your service host for MSMQ endpoints, for TCP binary endpoints. It doesn't matter, so you don't actually have to do the actual self-host program on those operating systems. So that just kind of gives you an idea of what's going on here in the system.
And I just would like to point out, in conclusion, that you wrote this.
Yes, I did. I hesitate to call myself a professional developer.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, have you slept at all? Or?
The harder part was, you know, doing the transition to service orientation, because I'd never done a service-oriented app, I'll be honest. And then really attacking this, the first implementation we did was more of just a porting the Java code over to .NET as a web app that had one web service. But I really took the time to go back and repartition the logic. There's actually another service I haven't shown, which is the order processor service, which we can remote as well. And took the time to do the dynamic configuration and the load balancing. And that's where I spent some amount of time and some debug cycles doing the testing. So luckily I can now sleep. And I think I've got it at the point where it's out on MSDN.
Yes.
And we'll be doing refreshes. There'll be a couple of bugs here and there, I believe, that we'll do refreshes on. And that's not bugs in our infrastructure code. It's bugs because I'm the developer that did the code. And, I tried to get all the bugs out. But there'll be a couple. And so we'll do probably a .1 upgrade in about 4 or 5 weeks. That'll work out maybe a couple kinks here and there. And it'll be interesting to gauge feedback from people to see whether they like what it has to show. And again, it really... even if you don't want to do the configuration service, there's a lot of techniques used in the app for the data access layer to get high performance.
Mm-hmm.
It shows off connectivity to Oracle using Oracle's data provider that's part of their client. You can download off of Oracle's site. It shows the interop with WebSphere. And so there's really a lot of things. And even the Windows apps, like the database loader I showed,
mm-hmm.
if you've ever wondered, how to do a really nice multi-threaded Windows GUI, where you can run long-running transactions and loads in the background, but still have a responsive UI.
Yeah.
Well, it uses delegates and it does the right thing there. So when you're loading 500,000 users into the database, it's responsive and gives you the updates and the stats. So even at that level, you can take a look at there's simple Windows apps, but how to accomplish some of that in your own applications.
Fantastic. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to meet with us, and thanks for spending all the time creating this application.
You're welcome.
It really is impressive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.